Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode in honor of the 75th anniversary of Operation Dragoon, the invasion of southern France, which started in mid-August 1944. Many of the glider pilots who had survived their one-way missions behind enemy lines a couple months earlier in Normandy were flying again for southern France, and that included Brooklyn, New York native Mel Pliner with the 436th Troop Carrier Squadron.
We were flown down to the northern coast of North Africa in a C-54, about 20 other glider pilots, myself. We landed at an air base down there and refueled, and the C-54 then flew up the east coast of Italy to a town of Certavizia.
All right.
Where they had carved out an airstrip, a dirt airstrip, and they had brought in some Waco gliders. Okay. After the Normandy invasion, those of us that survived and flew horse and gliders went to the commanding officer and told him, "Look, Colonel, we trained in the American Waco gliders. Let the Limeys fly their glide." And we never flew a horse again.
Uh-huh.
And he understood. Now, I'm fortunate that I did fly the horse and glider on D+1, because if I had been assigned a Waco on D-Day in a night mission, I might not be here.
Very true, because you know what happened to so many of those guys who did.
So many guys. It was a night mission.
Not to mention the guys they were carrying. So many of them were killed too.
Right.
So you guys now are in Italy, and you're going to be flying
CG-4. We're up to this airstrip near the little town of Certavizia. They bring on more troops, jeeps, jeep trailers, and so forth and so on. We, the glider pilots, and I guess the rest of the cooks and the bakers also, are in a tent area that's just a little bit below the airstrip, and we're sleeping in cots. And one night comes a hell of a rainstorm, and all the rainwater comes down into the tent area. When I wake up in the morning, my B4 bag is floating. Water is right up to the bottom of my cot. Everything else is floating. So there's no point in putting on shoes and socks. We're all walking around barefoot. Did that for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 days. Water drained off. Sun came out and dried up the mud. All you could see was footprints in the mud. Okay. Dried up. It got cleaned up, washed out, and so got back to normal. And I was assigned a Waco glider with a 75-millimeter howitzer, 3 troops, 10 rounds of ammunition. Now, reconnaissance photos showed that the town of Lemuy, L-E-M-U-Y, about maybe 25 miles inland from the southern coast of France.
Yeah, so this is the southern France invasion.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Just off to the right, there was a big clump of trees in the formation of the letter C. And when we were briefed, they showed this on the screen. It said, "When you see that letter C, that's the area that we want the gliders to land in, because we're behind enemy lines."
Of course.
We get into the glider, hooked up, take off, and we start to go north to the coast. And I notice the formation up front does a turn to the right. 15 minutes later, do another turn to the right. I think, well, mission's been aborted, canceled. 15 minutes later, do another turn to the right. Another 15 minutes, take another turn to the right. And the formation now headed back to the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Reason being that when we were supposed to land up there, the place was covered with fog. So they had to kill an hour.
Uh-huh.
15, 15, 15. We
made
an hour later,
yep,
we're heading back up. Okay, we get over the coast. I see the big letter C. I see the town of Lemuy. And I get the red light, the green light. And I cut loose. And here, now this is wine country. They were growing grapes.
Mm-hmm.
I see a field. It's a vineyard. And they've got the posts every so often with the wire going on and the grapevines on the wire. I come in and land on the top of this grapevines. And as I'm doing that, I'm just knocking down the posts. But the wire is taking the fabric out from under my glider. Made a good landing. I got out, The three troops get out ahead of us, and off to the left is a farmhouse, two stories with shutters. On the bottom, the three windows, the shutters are closed. On the second story, the end shutters are closed, but the middle one is open, and it's dark, and we start to draw rifle fire. We can see the fire. Get out, get in the side here, hot, eating grapes. Wasn't very long after that, another glider comes in and lands between my glider and the house.
Mm-hmm.
13 troops, pilot. They get out, come over on my side. The sergeant in charge says, "Lieutenant, we got a bigger gun than they got. Why don't we get it out? That's a good idea. You guys all concentrate on your fire on that middle window. Open the nose, and we roll out the howitzer. The sergeant takes open the breech, bore sights it, gets around, puts it in, closes the breech, and says, "Anytime, Lieutenant, out come three krauts." They could see that howitzer. We go blow them out of the foot. So they decided to give up. About that time, the troops here take over the krauts. All right, I know where the farmhouse was where we flew over, where the troops had taken over and made a headquarters. I figure, well, got to get back there and check in and tell them where my glider is with a howitzer. So I'm walking along this dirt road. I come upon a little Fiat automobile. It's in the ditch. So I figure, well, hell, a glider pilot would rather ride than walk. I'll check this out. Booby traps. So I went over to the field where the paratroopers had landed, took my knife, and I cut some shroud lines. Went back there and tied the shroud line to the door handle, and I went around the back, and I pulled it and opened the door. Nothing happened.
You were bracing for an explosion. It didn't happen.
I was thinking it might be booby trapped.
Sure.
I don't know.
A lot of things were.
Evidently, it wasn't. Door was open. Walked over there, and I looked inside. I didn't see the booby traps. So I got inside. It's got the ignition and the keys. It starts right up.
But it's still sideways in the ditch.
I can't get out of the ditch. Along comes Jeep.
Yeah.
I stop him. I say, "Hey, guys, help me get this thing out of the ditch." "No problem, Lieutenant." So we hook up a chain, pull it up. They said, "Now, if you guys would give me about a gallon of gas out of your jerry can, I'd appreciate it." "No problem." Put in a gallon of gas. I look at the gauge, half a tank. Now, something like that ought to get at least 30 miles to the gallon. So I drove this thing up to headquarters, told them where my glider was, and I told them I got this little Fiat automobile. "You think it'll tow a howitzer?" I said, "Only one way to find out." "Well, okay, go back to your glider and bring that howitzer back to headquarters." So I go back to the glider. The three guys are still standing there. I said, "Okay, guys, let's hook this thing up to this little car." By the time we're bouncing around in sand and pushing it, we finally get it up on the road. The guys get in the car, and we drive up to headquarters. I said, "Where do you want it?" "So just leave it anywhere." So I dropped it there. About that time, other glider pilots had checked in, and they were off to the side somewheres, and they had a pot that was, they were cooking something in. So when I went over there, I said, "Hey, what's cooking?" He said, "What do you got to put in it?" I said, "Come with me." In the back of this Fiat, I had found, now, it didn't have a trunk like our cars. You got to pull the back of the back seat forward.
Mm.
Case of French wine. With the bottles with the corks on it, the wire over it, you know.
Right, to release it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Look at that. It says, "You're in." Well, needless to say, after we passed out.
You had some French wine.
We get up the next morning. I'd like to go into the town of Lamoille and see what it's like. Well, the town of Lamoille is laid out like a wagon wheel. The hub is the church with the steeple, and the spokes are streets. We drive into the town, and we get about a couple of blocks from the steeple. We start to draw rifle fire. Stop the car, and then we get out into the doorways. I said, "Tell you what, let's concentrate our fire on the bell. Bing, bing, bing." After we've been firing at it for about 3 or 4 minutes, out come two krauts. Can you imagine being up in the tower next to that bell and we're bing, bing, bing? They gave up. Well, when they came down, the town came alive and they were going to kill him. Now I said, "No, hold on." Wasn't long after that the seaborne forces had come up from the beach in their trucks and equipment, jeeps and stuff like that. and they took care of the Krauts. We decided to go back to base, to our headquarters, get our gear, and head down to the beach. And I asked the swabby down there who's in charge. He says, Lieutenant over there. I drove up to Lieutenant. I said, Lieutenant, if you get us on the next boat out of here, you can have this car. He says, you see all the cars and trucks against the seawall? All mine. I wasn't the only one.
Uh-huh.
Well, we got on a boat over to the island where C-47s were in different squadrons waiting to take the glider pilots, those that survived. And we waited a while, took us back to our base. Well, we got back to base, and after the glider pilots made it back that survived, and we knew who made it and who didn't, because we knew how many of the glider pilots from our squadron flew in and how many came back. We got back on the C-54 and went back to England, and that was the Southern France invasion.
But we never would have heard that Southern France story from Mel if he had not survived a couple more glider missions, first in the Netherlands as part of Operation Market Garden, then in Operation Varsity along the Rhine River, a mission that would leave him with the Purple Heart.
We were going to land close to a main intersection highway where we were supposed to join other troops to set up a defense to keep any resupplies from getting to the troops. Cross the Rhine, drop down, green light, red light, and I cut loose. And here's a big field, I don't know how many acres, big power lines with the high towers across the field and gliders. Some of them hit the wires. So I figured, well, okay, I cut loose and I'm heading for that. And I got a place where there's room for me to land my glider. I'm 200 feet high. And I'm holding the wheel like this. And some Krauts, a bird shooter. Now, you know, most of the Krauts were aiming at the pilot's compartment, and it was going to the tail section. This guy's a bird shooter. You know how you lead birds?
Yeah.
I'm sitting like that, and he gets me right through the arm between the radius and the other. I said, take over, I'm hit.
So this is your co-pilot who's never done this before.
He froze. I pull up the spoiler and held it up with my left foot. And I landed it with my left hand and my right foot.
Because your right hand, you can't do anything
my
with.
My right
been
hand
hit.
Fell down.
It's useless.
Into shock.
So you're landing this glider one-handed.
One-handed, 1 foot. Of course, I was only about 200 feet high. When I did that, evidently, I took and wiped out the gear on my right side. Just came right off. Because over there, the fields, about every 15 furrows was a deep one to carry any moisture off the field instead of washing the grass off over to a ravine. Came to stop with the left wheel in the ravine and my right wing about a foot or two above the ground. By that time, all the troops had gotten out and my co-pilot came to life and he got out. I had on a flak vest. Now, a flak vest, yeah. It's got two snaps on each shoulder.
Right.
And it's got a belt around the waist with snaps. Supposed to be able to give it one good jerk. It's supposed to fall off.
Right.
Well, with my arm in shock, I'm pulling with my left hand, and it didn't come off. And I got scared, because with that thing on, you don't move very well.
It's
I gave
heavy.
It a second yeah. pull, and it came off. And I got out and got underneath. Spurt, spurt.
This wound in your arm is spraying blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I get out to get out my first aid kit.
Because you're all alone. Everybody else is left.
Got out, put a bandage. I put it around here to stop the bleeding.
Uh-huh. You had to give yourself first aid.
Yeah. About 30, 40 minutes, my co-pilot is lying on there. And this guy, he wants to get up and run. I says, hell, you wouldn't run 15, 20 feet and they'd shoot you. Because there was still a lot of rifle fire. But it wasn't too long after our troops started to take over. And the rifle fire started to just about quiet down. Shortly after that, a squad of American troops was crossing the field. I said, now's the time to get up and get in the middle of it. And we started yelling and screaming. And about 13 troops turned around with their rifles. American troops, hey, guy! Showed them the American flag on our shoulder. And we got in the middle of them. We got down to the ravine there, and there were other glider pilots there, troops. And there was a first aid guy.
Mm-hmm.
He saw I had this. He's, what happened to you? I said, I got one through the arm. He said, let me take a look. Took a look at it, put some sulfur, whatever it was, wrapped it, gave me a sling. He said, how does it feel? I said, hurts like hell. He says, here's a morphine syringe. Stick it in your arm. And he says, it'll keep you from hurting, slow you down. I says, I don't want it. If I got to move out, I want to be able to move out, which we did.
And, of course, he made it back to share that story with us. You can link to that complete original interview as well at hometownheroesradio.com. For us here on the radio, it's time for another break. And when we come back, two veterans from the 36th Infantry Division, a driving force in the success of Operation Dragoon 75 years ago. One became a prisoner, another was saved in one of World War II's most legendary rescues. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.